From Given, this is Purposing, the podcast that lifts the lid on how to run a truly purpose-driven business. I'm Becky Willen, and with the help of leaders at some of the world's most recognized brands, I'll be demystifying this often misunderstood topic into clear, actionable advice you can use in your own business. This week, I'm joined by Vijay Bains, Group Chief Sustainability Officer and Head of ESG at Emirates NBD. Vijay is leading the charge to embed sustainability at the heart of one of the Middle East's largest banks, helping to shape what it means for financial institutions to play a meaningful role in enabling a more sustainable future. With a career spanning climate research, consulting, and corporate leadership, he brings both deep expertise and a real passion for driving change where it's least expected. In this conversation, you'll hear why sustainable finance isn't simply a technical exercise, but a real opportunity for more affordable and longer-term capital. How embedding sustainability into governance, risk management, and remuneration can transform organizational behavior. And what it looks like to pioneer initiatives like reversing the gender pay gap and driving real transparency on climate finance. But before all that, let's hear about his journey towards making sustainability part of mainstream banking.
I loved sustainability from a really young age. I used to watch a TV show called Captain Planet. So I created my own Captain Planet outfit, which my parents were like, Vijay, that is, you're going to get bullied, just generally. But actually, they were really supportive of me to say, if you want to make something of this, go ahead.
Even as a child, Vijay was drawn to tackling big problems, and his parents' encouragement gave him the confidence to pursue that curiosity.
So actually, I studied environmental science at A-level, at university as well. I studied environmental science and climate science, became a climate science researcher as well, looking at climate change in North America, and then went to work for UNEP as well. And actually then came into kind of consulting. So actually did it as part of my role, as well as doing other work as well.
That path gave him both deep technical knowledge and a front row seat to how sustainability intersects with organisations and industry.
I grew up in Coventry, the West Midlands. It's a kind of industrial city. My mother worked in the car industry, my father worked in Royal Mail. We had great times, kind of, you know, I really love looking at the factories and thinking about things. And we'd often talk around where all the materials are going, where they're sourced from, and where things were recycled as well. So that kind of informed the way I was working more than anything.
Growing up surrounded by industry, Vijay developed a lens for understanding how cities function and how consumption patterns shape sustainability. That perspective would later inform his work right up to today.
I mean, sustainability has been fantastic for the last 20 years. It's really evolved as a space. So for me, I love it. I really love it. What brought me to Emirates NBD, it's fantastic. You wouldn't traditionally think as a GCC as being very sustainable. That's an opportunity for me. So I've generally really liked to go into different industries where it's maybe non-typical to really see how you can be sustainable.
So Vijay, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Becky.
So Vijay, you're the Chief Sustainability Officer at Emirates NBD. That's one of the UAE's largest financial institutions. And I really want to get straight into it. You work for a business in a market whose economic success and huge wealth has really been built from the extraction and sale of fossil fuels. So where does sustainability fit within the wider corporate strategy at Emirates NBD?
Thanks, Becky. I guess there's a few elements as well to the UAE economy. So the UAE really prioritizes oil as well as non-oil growth. So 70% of the drivers of GDP is now non-oil growth. You can see that more than ever. So some of the biggest economic drivers are tourism that we always hear about, but also infrastructure, trade, financial services as well. Now, for me at Emirates NBD, we are the largest bank in Dubai, one of the largest in the GCC. Sustainability is at the heart of everything we do. And the reason being is sustainable finance and sustainability are driving the world economy now more than ever. Year on year, sustainable finance issuances, frameworks, products are already growing. But also, as many of you are aware, UAE is also blessed, as well as oil, as you mentioned, but sunshine as well. So actually it makes a lot of sense to be really sustainable and use as much renewable energy as possible.
I think one of the interesting things about sustainability is that you're talking about the opportunity that that presents for the economy at a macro level. But I think what we're increasingly seeing is the impact of climate change at a really human level. And I can imagine in a place like UAE that for some time that wasn't felt until much more recently. So in April last year, the UAE experienced extreme floods. I'm sure many people would have read about them, something like 18 months worth of rain falling in 24 hours, the heaviest downpour on record. How did that influence the conversations that were happening about climate change, resilience, long-term prosperity for the region? Did it change things?
I think it's a great question. I think it sharpened minds definitely at a personal level. Sustainability, as you know, can be quite technical and full of kind of ESG terms as well. But actually, when you see a downpour like that, it really sharpens minds of what climate adaptation and climate mitigation really means. So the temperature increase has been well predicted. The humidity increase has been well predicted. Dubai, by the bay, is well predicted as well. So that rainfall happens. And I remember a few years ago as well, when I first came to the UAE, someone said, oh, it's going to start to rain. And everyone went and left home early. And I was like, what are you guys doing? It's fine, it's rain. It's about 2 o'clock. And then I realized actually it can be sometimes quite challenging in the country. Now, this was the largest downpour. It was a erratic climate event. And I think we are going to see more climate events like that in the region as well.
Okay, so this episode is focused on sustainable finance. So Vijay, how do you define sustainable finance and why is it so important, especially in the context of this conversation in terms of the impact of climate change and, you know, our ability to adapt to those events?
For me, sustainable finance is anything doing a social or sustainable good. So that can range from renewable energy projects where we're financing the largest solar sites in the world to the largest waste energy sites to also social financing as well through sustainably linked loans as well. And we're integrating it more into the corporate lending we're doing. So say for $50 million or $100 million as well. Now we link that to global standards like ICMA and LMA as well to make sure there's really, really robust. We're trying to grow that sustainable finance portfolio just to make sure we're aligned to net zero targets, to make sure we're aligned with not just GCC standards, but also global standards as well. And we've seen around the world, sustainable finance playing a bigger part of people's books.
And can you talk through some of the principles around that? Because I guess one of the, you know, most important considerations in finance generally and pricing finance is around risk. So, you know, and I guess if you're pricing investments in technology that may not have achieved scale or particular types of building that may not be fully proven at a kind of return level, like how do you price in that risk and make sure that investments in sustainability create, you know, sufficient returns, but also actually fuel the kind of progress that you're talking about?
So we price it in for conventional technology. So am I looking at novel kind of insulation technologies? Maybe not. I'm probably looking at those conventional ones like insulation, triple glazing, energy efficiency in buildings that are scalable. So I can price in the risk at the same rate I would do conventional. So the client doesn't suffer. We don't need to keep more risk-weighted assets. And the context is, I think, versus a few years ago, there's so many more sustainable technologies out there as well now. And I think actually we can provide mass financing to those different industries, whether it's climate adaptation, flood resilience, whether it's simple things in GCC, drainage. You know, we wouldn't think about it in Europe as being climate adaptation, but actually having sufficient drainage now, having a watershed plan is absolutely crucial. So the pricing is exactly the same. What that means is the clients get a really quick decision as well.
Yeah, and I do think that's a super interesting point, because I think what that suggests to me is that the challenge isn't one of a shortage of technology or a shortage of solutions. It's about actually how you fuel or use finance to fuel the adoption of solutions that are already out there. They're not niche, you know, they're actually becoming more and more mainstream. So there's a huge role for finance to play there, presumably.
You've hit me on the head. I think for my role is training and cranking capacity enhancement in the bank and outside the bank so that the risk team, our finance teams, really understand these are scalable technologies as well. We typically start the day, we get a number of deals across the desk, and then we make an assessment whether it's sustainable or not, according to our sustainable finance framework. We then also have a few novel ones where we think, oh, actually, that's quite new. That's maybe not in our framework, or there's a different technology. So we kind of say, is that going to be sustainable? What kind of GHG reduction will it have? So then we do an engagement with a client, and we typically have those a few times a day as well to say, what's the actual impact going to be? And we're really strict. So we have a sustainable finance committee that meets once every few weeks. I'm the chair of the sustainable finance committees, and we decide if it's in or out of scope as well.
Vijay, you've talked a bit about the sustainable finance framework of the bank. Can you explain a bit more about what that actually looks like in practice?
Sure. So our sustainable finance framework is published on our website. It's about a 20 to 30 page document. First 10 pages covers background to the bank and background sustainability. So it talks around our governance. So it talks about our committees for sustainability. So I sit, for example, on our group executive committee. I report to the group CEO and to the board sustainability committee as well. And then describes our risk management process for sustainability. So that actually sits across all of our financing, conventional and sustainable financing. So for us, sustainable financing is 10% of what we do as a group, but actually that sustainability risk management cuts across everything we do group-wide. Those checks are done for every corporate and major client, and then we do continuous screening as well for any breaches. So if a client came to us with sustainable finance, that's great. They go down the user proceeds route, but actually conventional financing, we do continuous screening. Then the final bit at the back of the document that's really, really interesting is the use of proceeds. So what that means is, what will this financing be used for? So is it clean water? Is it agriculture? Is it gender? And within that, we have a specific bank of KPIs. So to say, we will finance the largest green building or the most green buildings. We will finance clean water at X rate. We will finance a renewable energy project, which will be solar. We might not do hydro because actually we believe that can be environmentally damaging if it's a large scale. So actually what it contains is what's called a use of proceeds on one side and then exclusions on the other side as well. So in that way, actually my banking team can kind of look at it and go, okay, brilliant. I've got a renewable energy client or I've got a steel client. Ah, okay. They're going to emit this much. Oh no, but the power's from coal. Okay, that's an exclusion. We can't do that as well. So they use that framework then to decide at a really early stage, hopefully with a client, because I'm at a lot of client meetings at the moment, to really ascertain whether that's a sustainable transaction as well.
And how dynamic is this framework? Have those criteria been set out years ago and are pretty fixed, or is it something that you have to revisit and make sure it reflects, I guess, the latest science that we have available to us? What's the process for changing it?
Perfect. So we're actually going through it right now, refreshing the framework. So actually, we last published framework in September 2023.
Okay. So it's fairly regularly reviewed by the sound of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So we review probably every 18 to 24 months. What's probably emerged in the last few years is data centers are really big. Everyone keeps on telling me AI is really big. All of my friends seem to be working at AI now, relabeled. But I think data centers is really big. So actually we thought, we're getting a lot of those projects in. We've got a methodology, but we've not really been open about that methodology. So actually explaining what a green data center is really crucial. Then we realized we're doing more nature finance. So actually including those categories is really important as well. And we generally create categories for our group-wide and internationally robust. So in the background of our framework updates as well, we've got kind of a scientific way of looking at where we're like, we've made this assumption, but it's not in our framework, but it's in a slightly different category. So there's a general all-purpose one called green enabling. So what we're trying to do is kind of take that away and break that down and be more detailed. The frameworks themselves are about 20 to 30 pages, so they're not super long, deliberately so. I wanted to be 300 pages long. I love reading frameworks, Bertie. I love nothing more. But actually, I think sensibility has prevailed to make it a 30-page document.
So we're now also seeing the emergence of the idea of transition finance. How's that different from the broader idea of sustainable finance?
So for me, sustainable finance has a really strict use of proceeds criteria. So if I give an example of green buildings, you know, that would be EPC criteria B and A. So that's the greenest, greenest buildings. But actually, if I have a look at it, if you're grade C or if you're a LEED Silver, actually, that's still a green building but has a bit of a less energy efficiency or emissions reduction. So transition finance, the idea is to get those proceeds still to be financed. And the idea is if most banks have, say, 10% of the financing as being green, we've still got 90% of conventional finance. So transition finance for me is that halfway place. So, you know, that brown financing, but we then go on that train to become the greenest finance. And we've also seen, I think, let's say Barclays, NatWest, come out with guidance of how they describe transition finance. We've also seen Japan probably have the most mature transition finance market. What it means is more of conventional finance will be converted into transition.
Mm. And so I guess, and the reason it's important is to prevent a sort of polarization, I guess, from happening between what is the greenest and every other potential investment. So is it fair to say that transition finance helps move the global sort of investment portfolio in the right direction?
I think that's a perfect description. And I completely agree. It's to kind of convert more of conventional finance into sustainable finance and do it in a considerate and consistent fashion as well.
So we've touched on the role of nature. Let's focus a little bit on that. And I guess especially with last year's biodiversity COP16 in Colombia, where there was a real focus on finance, especially. Can you talk a little bit more about what role financial instruments can play in helping to protect biodiversity?
Yeah, and it was absolutely fantastic. I was very privileged to have attended the COP in Cali. So there's a lot of focus, I think, preceding it on debt for nature swaps. The idea is that you'll get a discount rate for protection of nature of a set area, and then set criteria, let's say mean species density or protection of a certain species as well. These are typically done at, say, a country level or a sub-country level. We probably need to see these scale out a little bit more. What we saw post the COP is more integration, probably more adoption of TNFD, so Task Force for Nature Finance Disclosures. And I know we all love the acronyms, but actually it's really important because actually what we saw 5 to 10 years ago with the adoption, or sorry, 5 years ago, with the adoption of TCFD, Task Force for Climate Finance Disclosures, is that actually climate financing followed the reporting. So now we're seeing TNFD at record numbers. Now we're starting to see the emergence of more bank sustainable finance frameworks containing nature and biodiversity. We're now going to start to see more issuances as well. So again, we've seen a record for nature for debt swaps. We've also seen a record for nature financing and really thinking of risk management. Now, nature is quite different to climate. Climate, again, we can do GHG equivalent. Nature, there's probably about 20 different KPIs that we can look at. So what we're also seeing is more integration of the Kunming Montreal Protocol into risk management. And that's probably what we're seeing more of. So we're going to probably see more of impact finance becoming nature finance in the next few years as well.
I also wanted to ask you about the social dimension of sustainability in all of this, and specifically about the just transition. We can see that there are, you know, as you're talking about, a real increase in the flows of capital moving into projects that support the transition to a lower carbon, even kind of nature positive solutions. And I guess that, you know, the principle of the just transition is doing that in a way that creates value for more people rather than only protecting the assets and interests of the already wealthy. So can you talk a little bit about how that concept is playing out through, you know, for example, the sustainable finance frameworks that you've been talking about?
I think just transition is really important. And I think if I look globally as well, we've had feedback around sustainable finance. Actually, just transition is really important to really prioritize people at the heart of this, and also those affected by transition, climate change, or other environmental factors. So for me at Emirates NBD, and I think in the region, we look at a few different elements. We look at, say, SME financing to make sure people aren't debanked, for example. We also have a look at just transition principles as well to say which populations are affected by certain project financing we're doing as well. To make sure if you build a solar plants and it looks great. Is it displacing people? Is it displacing those people or lowest income as well? We then also have a look at just transition as well to say, how are we providing financing? Do the projects as well have a social element and criteria to them as well? So we are now engaging with more and more clients to say, could we do that as well? So let's take, for example, housing. Is there a low-income housing part of that? Is there a diverse population there? Are we providing mixed-use neighborhoods as well? And that can be really beneficial to the region to reduce traffic, but actually really beneficial from a societal point of view to have a mixed society as well. So Just Transition really cuts across everything we're doing in terms of our corporate financing. We're now trying to really look at that lens for all of our financing as well.
And so, because I think that's the shorthand that I think can be helpful in thinking about this is the intention of doing sort of less harm. So that might be, you know, how do you make sure that if you're building a huge infrastructure project, you know, in a region that relies on a large migrant labor workforce, for example, that you are upholding those workers' human rights and, you know, is part of the kind of construction process. There's also a more good element to it, which I think you've also described. How do you make sure that the output of that is a perhaps a housing project that improves lives of a really diverse group of people and not only the most wealthy? So perhaps, yeah, you could touch on a couple more examples of how you're able to do both of those things simultaneously.
Yeah, so I'll talk around the kind of expat population. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say I think everyone's an expat, regardless of which country you're from, we were immigrant in the UAE. And I think that's the same for the UK as well, and a lot of countries as well. So if I have a look at the expat population as well, and if I have a look at us as a bank, so we've integrated the UK Modern Slavery Act into our financing, and that's across all of our banking operations. So what that means is we scan our corporate clients for any human rights, I won't say abuses, but challenges as well. We also do active engagement industry by industry where we believe there are thematic issues as well. And that's a really proactive engagement. That then goes into our sustainable finance criteria as well on the social side as well. We also then do spot checks with the clients as well. And again, I think that's above and beyond probably what we see elsewhere. We then also have quite a robust ruling with the UN Global Compact as well, being integrated into our human rights framework. And then we've got the statutes from the ILO as well, which again goes into our ESG risk management framework as well. All of those together are quite a robust methodology. We've actually ranked our methodology, it's been ranked very highly, but it shows the degree of care that we believe we need to have as well. And that's across all of our countries of operation to make sure, for me, you know, human rights are the same in every country of operation and applies the same as well. Like you said, from risk management, it really goes into the financing as well. So it becomes a material topic, particularly where supply chain industries as well.
Let's turn to what all of this means for businesses more broadly. So what opportunities does sustainable finance create for businesses across different sectors? And would you say that the opportunities are the same, or are there some sectors where the opportunities are huge and others where actually less relevant today?
I think the opportunities are everywhere. We cannot see climate change in real time. What that means is climate change is having an impact on our industries. So it's changing consumption patterns. It's changing weather patterns. So actually, it's affecting everything. We have to look as a bank from a risk management point of view to think, what is climate change impact having on your industry? We then have to look at things like liquidity provisioning as well, say, how much capital will we keep aside for a climate risk event, for any clients that might not be able to pay back their loans and bonds as well. There are industries that are already growing rapidly from sustainable finance. And the biggest ones probably are building developments, becoming more energy efficient. There's also huge demand for green steel and carbon offsets, so that's having a huge impact. LNG has probably been the biggest transformation. So the tumbling price of solar, the tumbling price of wind. And I think, you know, if you drive anywhere in the UK now versus 5-10 years ago, you know, you see wind turbines everywhere as well. If you drive anywhere within the GCC, you'll see solar panels everywhere. And then the other side as well, we're seeing our energy consumption chain. So the biggest financing opportunities in car industry are EVs, now plug-in hybrids as well. So actually the demand for lithium and other rare earths has really gone through the roof. That's really change dynamically some companies. So if a given company like Glencore, very large in mining, very large in coal, but also the largest at financing lithium and rare earths to make batteries. Where do you place that company? Is it sustainable? Is it conventional? Is it transition? It's kind of all three. And actually more and more companies are going to be like that as well.
And so if you're working in one of these businesses, what do you really need to know about sustainable finance? What are the things that any leader who's interested in sustainability really needs to know about sustainable finance? What are the top, I don't know, three things that we should all know in business about this opportunity?
I think the number one is that it's a market and capital to be tapped. So that sustainable finance is really ring-fenced by asset managers for you to tap into, and you can do that at preferential rates. And often we're looking for the business case of sustainability, sustainable finance. You know, sustainable finance is that business case. Number two, it's easy to do. It kind of aligns to what your business is as well. So if you're producing steel and it's maybe renewable or using transitionary elements, that can qualify. That can qualify. And the third area is your banks are looking to finance more and more of this. Bankers are here to support you. And I think that's the biggest one. I think people will be surprised of the level of expertise within banks now. Many banks contain engineers, environment scientists, climate scientists, as well as bankers to really understand your business model and how best to finance you. So I think those are probably the top three. So one, cheaper financing can be accessed. Two, longer term financing can be accessed as well, blended finance. And three, the expertise as well. Your banker isn't just there for that loan, but there for a partnership as well.
And so tell us about some of the things that you would like to see happen in the future. Perhaps let's start with Emirates NBD. What are the priorities over the next couple of years and to really make sustainable finance a bigger, more important part of what the bank is doing overall?
So I think for me, number one, but to expand sustainable finance. So to cover more of our corporate clients as well. I think, you know, I really want to get rid of the technical terms. I mean, sustainable finance is just money provided for sustainability. That's it. That's literally it. And anything can qualify there as well. So for me, growing that proportion of our book is crucial. The second is capacity enhancement. So if I'm going to have a look at it, sustainability has become really technical. You know, engineers, scientists, but the concepts are understood by everyone. Now, I lock my laptop because someone typed a really weird message the other day, but you don't call me kind of head of cybersecurity because of that as well. It's the same with sustainability. So I really want to be able to disseminate and get that information to all of my stakeholders inside a bank and outside a bank. I really want to get rid of the kind of stereotypes so that actually it becomes mass adopted as well. And I think sustainable finance compared to 5 years ago is huge. I think third is risk management. Integrate it into our everyday decision-making and take longer-term views as well. I think the average tenure of a corporate loan might be 5 to 6 years. So actually taking a decision over 5 to 6 years is key. I think we too often start to have the debate and say, 2050 is really far away, Vijay, you'll be dead by then. I'm like, wait, I'm planning to live for at least another 7 years. What's going on? But actually planning it and doing things according to the corporate life cycle is absolutely crucial. Actually, five-year tenor, a lot of things can change. We've seen a lot of climate events. We've seen a lot of change in sustainability. So integrating that more deeply into corporate decision-making is key. And I think finally, training young talent. I think really being positive. I've been in sustainability, I know it's shocking, for 20 years now, because I look like a Benjamin Button. But actually, there's been a huge amount of change in that period and that time as well. It can feel really scary right now. It will be fine. It will pass. It will pass. And actually, sustainability will be more integrated into our decision-making in MBD and elsewhere.
Yeah, no, but you're right, though. It has to be part of governance and risk management. And it has to be part of the capacity capability building, as you say, that skills agenda to take sustainability from a sort of purely technical into a mainstream part of business management, I think is a really important step for all of us working in sustainability to help the organizations that we work with take. And so I guess if we look to the future, I don't know, if we imagine 5 years into the future and the things that you've talked about haven't just been prioritized at Emirates NBD, they've been prioritized across the financial community. What's possible if we can really unlock the potential of sustainable finance? What does the world look like when that happens?
I think the world looks like somewhere where renewable energy is cheaper than conventional energy. We've got a large adoption of, let's say, EVs and other vehicles. We actually change our consumption patterns as well to really price things in really well. We're living in energy efficient buildings. That's kind of, for me, what it looks like. And I think we've got a more equitable workplace. So for us at Emirates NBD as well, a big one, which I haven't mentioned, is remuneration. Linking sustainability to remuneration, we've done at executive level. We should do that at every level in the company as well. So people take it incredibly seriously as well. So for me, those are some of the outcomes as well. Now, we have debates, Becky, around how sustainable EVs are. What I want to see in 5 years is even more debates like that as well. Because actually, I'm not sad to have that. You know, my iPhone uses the same battery as an EV does. So we don't have many debates around iPhone sustainability as we do about an EV. But actually, having that debate is really good. So I want more debates and more awareness in the next few years. It's really integrated.
So one of the things that I'm really passionate about is how we embed sustainability into the decision making, into the BAU decision making of an organization from one day to another. So it's not just living in a framework, even if it is available for everybody to look at. It really is hardwired into business as usual. So what are some of the things that you've done at Emirates NBD to bring sustainability into the organizational decision-making and everyday practice?
Yeah, so one of the key areas, we set a target for our gender pay gap. Our gender pay gap now is, I think, almost all our levels reverse. So females are paid more than males and their male counterparts. But actually, we looked around and said, we probably need more senior leadership that is female and representative of society. So we set a 25% target by 2027. We're probably now about 18%, so we're running ahead of our velocity. So I'm really hoping to close that off. That's been a really hard target, and that's, again, been embedded into our remuneration, embedded into our scorecards. The second one is emissions reductions as well, so operational emissions. And I know everyone says, operational emissions don't matter in a bank. Actually, it kind of do, because actually, if you think about a bank, it's kind of an IT company, because most of us actually use our app. We don't go to branches, unless you're me, because I love going to branches. But actually, unless you're showing a pain of going to net zero and understanding that, you're kind of not really engaging the clients in the right way, because we've had to build out solar power plants, buy renewable energy credits, do verification. It's really tricky. And if I'm advising clients to do that and I'm not doing it myself, it doesn't really sound credible. So we've linked that to, again, our executive remuneration, which includes myself as well. And then finally as well, it's disclosures and governance as well. So we've again linked that together as well, because actually we have a look at our disclosures. They weren't quite where we want to be. So now we're really proud this year to be the first bank in the world to publish an ISSB aligned report. I wasn't planning to be the first, but actually it was part of our strategy to improve our disclosures. And then IFRS informed us that we were the first. So that's really linked in some hard KPIs into how we do sustainability as well for remuneration.
And can you give an example of one of the disclosures that sort of changed as a result of that process?
Yeah. So we're actually the first bank in the world to show how climate finance is now part of our books and as part of our financial statements. So we're the first bank in the world to do that. Also through DenizBank as well, we've looked at our liquidity provisioning. And again, that we're the first bank in the world. We also talked around climate resilience, climate change. We've also really been open about proxy information that we use, because there's a lot of proxy information we use. So we've been really open about that. And over everything, I have a simple rule of thumb for any disclosures: must be in clear English, but secondly, must have assurance as well.
Vijay, thank you for being such a brilliant guest on Purposing.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Vijay. Loads of brilliant ideas there. So here are a few things that I've taken from the conversation. We need the world's biggest banks to simultaneously raise the floor and raise the ceiling when it comes to sustainability. Raising the floor is about risk management, integrating sustainability and social considerations into business as usual risk and lending decisions, and backing it up with continuous screening. But we also need banks to raise the ceiling with innovative financial products and services that actually drive the adoption of technologies and solutions that create environmental and social progress alongside financial returns. But it's not only about getting the right financial instruments in place, it's about creating demand for those products too. The same goes for asset managers in the City of London as the property developers that Vijay works with in the UAE. The science is clear, the solutions exist, but now we need storytelling to really unlock that. And on top of that, it's about creating the right conditions for businesses in all sectors to make sustainable finance part of their decision-making. It's about governance, you know, hardwiring into business as usual processes, transparency to share progress, and building people's knowledge and skills too. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. If you'd like more practical advice on building a purpose-driven business with brilliant insights from people like Vijay, download the Insider's Guide to Purpose at givenagency.com/thinking.